magic number. Because 2 times 3 is
6,
and 3 times 6 is
18,
and the 18th letter in the alphabet is
R.
Yeah, we got 3 R's we're gonna talk about today. We gotta learn to reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Well, if you're going to the market to buy some juice, you gotta bring your own bags and you learn to reduce your waste. We gotta learn to reduce. And if your brother or your sister's got some cool clothes, you can try them on before you buy some more of those. Reuse. We gotta learn to reuse. And if the first 2 R's don't work out, and if you gotta make some trash, well, don't throw it out. Recycle. We gotta learn to recycle. We gotta learn to reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Neil Yelland, a financial advisor with Edward Jones in Chico. No matter where you are in life's journey, Neil can offer guidance and strategies for wealth and retirement income, college savings accounts, estate and legacy plans, charitable giving, and more. For a consultation or more information, Neil can be reached at 530-345-8913. He's on the corner of 3rd Avenue and the Esplanade. Neil Yellen, Edward Jones, member SIPC. And we're supported by J&J Automotive in Chico, with over 19 years of experience in auto repair and scheduled maintenance. They specialize in Subaru and Volvo. J&J also provides everything from manufacturer-suggested vehicle maintenance to all types of repairs, including transmission and engine repair, brake and suspension, tune-ups, lubes, filters, lights, and more. To book an appointment or for more information, visit jandjautomotivechico.com or give them a call at 530-891-3328. And today we are going to play a recording of an interview that we recorded earlier this morning. It's a great interview, but I'm sorry to say that for about the first 11 minutes, you'll hear an echo in the voices of the speakers, the guests, not the interviewers. We don't like to point fingers on this program, but in this case, the finger points back at me. But it's a great interview. Enjoy it. You can ride out the first 11 minutes, then hear the rest of the interview.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And you are listening to Ecotopia, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological. I'm Susan Schutte.
And I'm Stephen Schutte. Tonight we'll be talking about two employees of the Butte County Public Works Department. We'll learn about what goes on at the Neil Road Recycling and Waste Facility.
Our guests are Eric Miller, manager of the Waste Management Division, and Craig Sissel, deputy manager of Solid Waste. There's so much to learn about what goes on with the things that we get rid of.
So you two are basically responsible for Neil Road, the waste facility, is that correct? Are there any other facilities that you oversee?
We kind of, in a weird way, through contracts, also kind of oversee the household hazardous waste facility in Chico. We do oil cleanup in Gridley, and we facilitate the part of the Recology household hazardous waste facility in Oroville as well.
Okay.
Anything else other than that, Eric?
No, this is Eric Miller, and thank you for having us. We also are at Butte County is also Public Works responsible for overseeing the administration of the solid waste collection franchises, which involve garbage collection and solid waste collection in Chico. the Orville urban area and the Paradise Megalia area.
So those are the big trucks?
Those are the big trucks. We do not operate them. We operate the Neal Road recycling waste facility or the landfill. Right. So that's our daily involvement is at landfill operations.
Could we do a little visual radio for those who have not been to the landfill? Maybe you can describe it. And I'm going to chip in. I'm a regular landfill user, and I love that place. So I'm going to describe it from my point of view, too.
Hey, Craig, can I take... Steve, thank you, because you're satisfaction guaranteed or double your trash back. That is our motto. The site's actually... opened as a landfill in 1970. So the Neal Road landfill is 52 years old. But visually, it's a roughly 200-acre facility. And think about having a gigantic backyard where you're always fixing plumbing systems and electrical systems and all that sort of thing. We're the Butte County's longest-running active construction activity, going back 52 years, and we still have site life remaining. But over its history, the landfill has been operated. It is owned by the County of Butte. It is currently operated by Public Works Department. But throughout its history, it's been privately operated. It's been contract operated. But the liability still remains with Butte County and with that the citizens for what things are thrown away. I mentioned it's roughly a 200-acre facility. The high point is nearly 500 feet. Tall module one. It's a closed area. You can fit a 5-story building inside of it, and that impresses a lot of people. We are a very busy place. I think Craig and I track traffic. The traffic from customers that come in has increased greatly, especially since COVID, but particularly since 2016 and 2017. We annually serve more than 100,000 vehicles per year, and I think we hit about 120,000. Well, we didn't hit anybody. We reached about 120,000. Yeah, we don't want to hit anybody out here. We're very busy, and during our peak hours, we can serve anywhere from one customer every 75 seconds. Mm-hmm. So we're open 7 days a week. And there's a lot of action and activity out here, which makes it very interesting.
I'll chip in.
And to paint a little bit more of a picture, this is Craig. And so when you're driving down Highway 99, if you're going northbound, we're on the right-hand side when you hit Neal Road. Right when you pass Neal Road, if you look off to the right, you will see open graze land with cattle right now currently grazing out there. And we happen to be the pyramidal shape that's in the distance. Some people refer to us as a Mount Neal. And if you're going southbound, we're on the left-hand side right before you get to Neal Road, or left-hand side right before you get to Neal Road. Driving up Neal Road, the first thing you pass on the right-hand side is the old worm farm. Left-hand side is Franklin, who does different types of things with rock, either be asphalt or just different kinds of road base or things like that. And then we're beyond that on the left-hand side is our entrance. Our facility, as Eric mentioned, is about 200 acres. We have a gas to energy facility on site. We do all kinds of recycling here besides taking in waste. And we think it's a great place to work in the county. Mm-hmm. We have some of the best views from the top of our landfill. We have some of the best views in the county as well.
I'm going to jump in at this point as a user and describe the adventure. When you pull in, you pay your fee. And you ensure people that you're not carrying any banned items like fluorescent tubes, there's a long list, paint cans, aerosol cans. And so you assure the person at the gate you're not bringing that in. And then the part I love, often you go take roads that change month by month. Sometimes they go up high. Most recently, they go way down into the bowels of the landfill. Somebody directs you to back your vehicle in, and you do see people who've never used trailers. trying to back in, you know, to go the wrong way. I just have an SUV, so I can make it usually on the first shot. You dump your stuff. I will say, editorialize, it's embarrassing how much stuff we dump down there. There's no scavenging at the landfill, but I see huge quantities of wood thrown out, plastic lawn chairs that still look serviceable. You can't take those home. What you do is you dump your stuff, head off. The other thing I appreciate then, I go up back up to the top to recycling, where you can recycle flat cardboard, and there's a bin for plastic and paper waste, miscellaneous trash. So you can do all your recycling at the landfill. And I know you have other places. There are mattresses up there, bicycles, appliances, and so forth. So almost anything a person has to dispose of can be taken care of at Neal Road. That's the end of my commercial.
Eric, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah. Steve, you hit on a lot of stuff there, and I'm sure Craig will, but I've got my mind is tracking here. Your comment about the cars and trailers, and the same people that cannot back their trailers at the landfill also appear at the Lake Orville. They cannot back up their boats either. So it's that's just a phenomenon that's in the industry. It's kind of, we try to help them as much as possible and guide them. Yeah. You also mentioned the amount of waste that you see as a customer, whether it's cardboard or metal or plastics. Some statistics, and this is through the state of California waste generation studies conducted by CalRecycle. But per capita, Californians generate nearly 5 pounds of trash per person per day. So that equates to just under a ton of trash per person per year. And when you think about 4 or 5 pounds of trash per day, just for my bizarre curiosity, I Googled the weight of a human adult arm is about 5 pounds. if you're a waiter, it's going to be higher than that. So we as consumers, and that's the key point, we are consumers, and the landfill is the final resting point, the end of the product line for consumer products, period. Once items are disposed and hit the ground, we are not to salvage or scavenge. It's a safety issue. And not only for our employees, but for the public, we're just not set up for that. But there are some facilities that Craig is working on, and I'm supporting him as we proceed forward with what is this place going to look like in the next 10 or 15 or more years? Can we pull out some of that stuff or have it not appear at the disposal area to begin with? So, but Americans, we are consumers. We buy products, we get bored with them, or they wear out. And as you mentioned, there's a lot of good products that come in here, desks, chairs, office furniture, clothing, that people that are too busy to donate or resell or whatever, and they're in a time crunch. They need to, you know, this community is a college area. Students need to move out, and they just in a hurry to vacate, and here it comes. So I don't know if Craig wants to add to that.
Yeah, Craig, what are you working on that related to that? That sounds interesting.
So we went on a tour down to Yolo, and Yolo happens to have a facility that's a reuse facility there. And right now, many of your listeners might be aware of this because some probably watched the Board of Supervisor meetings as well. And we recently went to the Board of Supervisors with a master plan that we're having an outside contracting firm do this for us, which is going to provide us with a view of what we're going to have a focus group and stuff too to involve the community members that want to participate, but we're going to try to figure out what is the overall benefit to the landfill long term for the community. Is it going to be having a MRF on site, which is a material recovery facility? So trash comes in a truck, it's dumped on the ground, it goes over a conveyor belt system, the plastic, paper, glass, metal, everything's pulled out, the usable items are put off to the site. Does that then get put, the usable items then get put into a reuse facility where all the dressers and couches and maybe flat screen TVs that are still usable, tables, chairs, things like that, clothing, gets put in a building almost like a Goodwill in a, per se, and then is resold. That money then goes back into our budget to continue that process because there will be staffing needs that cost money, the footprint of that building, the building cost to put the building there, things like that, and not to mention even staff's services for pulling that material out of the landfill and or out of the trash as it comes in and moving it to that building for the repurposing. So that's something where we're kind of working on behind the scenes. It hasn't really officially been approved yet, but that may be something that comes out of our master plan process that really benefits the community long term.
That sounds fantastic. I love that.
People have written, in fact, that landfills may be the mines of the future. And they cite some of the landfills. There's one in Brazil, I think, where people literally live on the land next to the landfill because they're mining stuff as it comes in. And it's a product of our consumer society that we throw away a lot of stuff that could be recycled.
In fact, at the studio, KZFR 90.1 in Chico, I was at my bank and they had been remodeling and they have all of these desk chairs. And I said, what are you guys going to do with those desk chairs? And he said, we're taking them to the dump. And I said, I'll take them. And they delivered them to the studio for me. But, you know, I mean, people just throw it away. Oh, we can't use this anymore. And that, of course, makes waste management a huge project. I just want to go back for a few minutes to the picture of the site. And I'm wondering who decides and how those new roads and those new places that you go, how that gets done. And also, I'm amazed by the equipment. Could you talk about that a little bit? Sorry, I'm going backwards, but it just fascinates me.
Okay. All right. Well, for the customer that comes in here, they'll check in at their scale house, then they'll drive down. Our access road changes, and a lot of people, if they only visit us once or twice a year, they'll ask us, why did you move around? Well, that's you're driving on garbage, essentially what's happening. So a way to consider this is when you paint a room in your house, and you don't want to paint yourself into a corner. You have to kind of plan strategically how to move the couch, the coffee table, otherwise you're stuck. So we have what is called a fill sequencing plan. And we are filling this hole in the ground, essentially airspace. And I'll get to that in a moment. But we have to plan up to 4 to 6 months in advance to know where we'll be filling trash. So today is March 1st. We, by May, we will be planning where garbage will be next winter. So we have to plan with our landfill supervisors, our equipment operators, how are we going to fill this hole in the ground to control traffic, stormwater, and those sorts of things. Getting to airspace, we have many customers will see a bulldozer. It's a Caterpillar bulldozer, a D8, it's a technical term. It weighs over 40 tons. Wow. And that equipment operator works in tandem with a compactor, which weighs about 45 tons. So anyone who's gone camping, for example, you're at a campsite, and somebody forgets to bring the trash bags. So you're camping out, and so what do you end up doing? You fill out the trash can, then you get some gullible person to stop the trash with their boot and get as much airspace as possible in that trash can. So that's what the role of the compactor is, to smush the trash. The bulldozer places the trash. So the combine these two machines weigh about nearly 90 to 100 tons. In each one of them cost about $900,000 to $1 million each. So they're very expensive to purchase, and they're very expensive to operate. And but getting back to some of those costs, when you buy a car, you have the option to pay cash for it, or you can finance it through the lender. And so the county and other municipalities and private operators have that ability to finance these machines, because not everybody has a spare $1 million lying around for a unit that's going to last 7 years. So those are the primary pieces of equipment that we use on site to maximize airspace and operate the site.
I think you could recoup some of that cost if you had a Saturday when you would let citizens run that equipment. I would pay $100 to get to run the compactor and grind around on those giant wheels. These listeners, these are equipment that no amateur can run.
Right. I've been on site here for 6 years, and the crew was teasing me. They said, you ought to get in the bulldozer just for fun. I said, no, you don't want me in there. I'll end up on the Skyway, and I'll get really lost. We have seasoned pros that are operating these machines and dealing with customers and their traffic, and doing it safety is our primary function here.
So I didn't give you this question in advance, even though I was supposed to. But how has your view of human nature been affected by working in waste management? No answer.
Silence.
That's a loaded question.
It is a loaded question, but as you were talking, I just thought, oh my gosh.
I think the answer is, this is Steve, the answer is we have the highest respect for those who make use of trash removal facilities in our community, and we have no complaints about what they do.
No. Oh, my gosh, no. Okay, we can move on from that question.
I do have an observation, though, and maybe Craig, and with COVID, the solid waste workers, the crews that collect the trash and do the recycling and operate the landfills, we were categorized as essential workers.
Right.
So while many people stayed home, we've been here and we've seen an uptick in traffic and waste generation. And my observation is Americans are major consumers. And the people that stayed home and upgraded their TVs and computers and all that sort of stuff, we saw a huge spike in electronic waste that came in during 2020 because people were replacing their computers and all that sort of thing. And it's just kind of mind-boggling that it just seems socially that we are a wealthy country. And we have the ability to buy and upgrade consumer products
right. And
be kind of cavalier on how it's disposed. These things are disposed.
Right.
So that's just from boots on the ground practitioner observation.
Mm-hmm. So Steve said a little bit about the things that are on the list that you can't bring to the dump. Could you say a little bit the waste management facility?
Yes.
Also known as the dump. Can you say a little bit about what people should do before they come to Neal Road with their stuff? How they should separate it out? If they're being good users of the facility, how should they organize to come to the waste facility?
In my opinion, the way it would start out would be before they leave their house, they put a tarp over their load. As you can see, driving down the highway, you'll see a bunch of trash off the side of the road, even on Neal Road, because those are the main thoroughfares of people coming here, 99 and Neal Road. You see a lot of trash off the side of the road. A lot of those people are showing up with their loads uncovered, and that people think, oh, I've got it secured properly. Well, you do for sitting in your driveway, but when you're putting 60 to 70 mile per hour winds on that load, the lids blow off, stuff lifts up and becomes airborne and blows out. So we ask mainly before they leave that they please tarp their loads securely. Inside their load, they could put it in however they want, but the electronics, washer, dryers, refrigerators, stuff like that, we ask that maybe that stuff gets all put in one select area. Tires, if they're bringing those, and public members cannot bring more than 9 tires at a time without a permit. from CalRecycle or the Caltrans. I think it's Caltrans, right, Eric? DTS or DT, Department of Toxic Substance Control. There's a limit on tire. You can bring 81 tires in a day, but only 9 at a time. They don't want you to transport more than 9 at a time. I don't know if it's fire danger or the thought of illegal dumping, because once tires catch on fire, they're very difficult to put out, nearly impossible. So there's a limit to those. That's good for the population to know that our customer base, that 9 tires or less. We do take them with rim. There's a different charge for ones with rim. Those materials, recyclable materials that they want to put in our mixed recycling bin, those could be source separated and put in a different place in the trailer. And then their trash that they're actually getting rid of could be in a different area. That will help them when they get on site decide, do I want to go down and dump my trash first and throw that out and then come back up to the recycling area and put all the stuff in the recycling area? Or do I do it backwards? Do I go to the recycling area and then go down to the trash area? We do charge for washer dryers, but electronics are free. So if you do have TVs or plug-in microwaves or things like that, we do accept those materials for free. Mattresses are free. So when we drive around the community and see TVs thrown off on the side of the road or mattresses, it's a little disheartening that people don't realize that they could have gone another 3 miles up the highway and could have got rid of them for free. Another point that's important to note is our hours of operation are from 7 a.m. until 4 p.m. Like Eric mentioned, 7 days a week. And we do ask that you do show up a half an hour before 4, though, because we do, the gates do close at 4. If you show up at 4 and 20 seconds, you will not get in, unfortunately. You showed up too late. Plus, it's holding up our staff. We do have closeout procedures that we have to do at the end of the day that the public doesn't see, that takes anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half to close out our site so that we can go home. And we want to get home at a good hour, so we ask that people show up early enough that they provide us that etiquette.
What happens to recycled materials? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Eric.
No, that's a good segue. Craig mentioned some of the items that we accept for recycling, the appliances such as washers and dryers. We do have a $6 per unit fee for that, because we need to work with our metals recycler to remove the compressors and the motor systems from those. So that's at our cost. There are compressor oils inside the motors that run these machines, and we cannot have that leaked anywhere on site, especially if it's off halts elsewhere in process. Refrigerators, we, in addition to removing the Freon, they also have compressor units in there too. A compressor essentially has oil in it. And so that is also, we charge $15 per Freon unit. Craig mentioned we do have piece rates for tires, in addition to potentially catching fire or providing a habitat for mosquitoes. Tires and mattresses, if they are buried in the landfill, have a tendency to float. They spring back and can float through the top of the garbage and create problems for us. Plus, they consume a lot of airspace. Mattresses, last year, we recycled about over 20,000 mattresses, which is mind-boggling. And I've done a little bit of research on this. If you stack these mattresses on top of each other, they're nearly as high as Mount Lassen. If you line them end to end, it would span roughly 22 or 23 miles. So essentially, you could lay out these mattresses from Chico to Oroville and hop your way all the way across Butte County. So that is an enormous amount of airspace that is being saved. And you as a consumer, and me as a consumer, I bought a mattress for a spare bedroom. I paid a $10 fee to cover the cost of the recycling. And in the $300 purchase, the $10, it wasn't even noticeable. But what we do is have our mattresses, for example, are exported to a facility in Woodland, where the mattresses are unloaded from 60-foot-long box trailers, set on a spinning table, and as the king, queen, or twins are unloaded, the table spins, and these crew will get these X-Acto knives and cut off and remove the textiles. And there's a market for rags. There's also a market for the foam padding. And some of these textiles can be manufactured and repurposed into something else, whether it's floor mats or things like that, you know, a lower consumer product. And then the steel coils and the wood all have their own respective markets for scrap metal and wood. So the mattress is a very good example of a product stewardship that's working very well, especially in California.
Craig, we know you have to head off to another meeting very shortly. We want to really thank you for being on Ecotopia with us this evening. And again, we really appreciate the service that the landfill provides. A lot of folks don't ever get to see the landfill, so they just, you know, we just dump stuff and assume that the big trucks will take it away. But it's an incredibly valuable service to our community. So thank you, Craig Sissel, for being with us on Ecotopia this evening. And we'll continue with, we'll see if we can ask Eric some questions that he can't answer.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And before I leave really quick, Eric may touch on this later. We are willing to, if community members do want a tour of the landfill, we love giving tours to people to educate them more on what we do as well. So thank you and have a good afternoon. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Eric, I wanted to ask about, I'd like you to continue saying what you were talking about, what happens to recycled materials as they leave, because I think that's another, you know, just totally blind area for people. They don't really know what it means to recycle.
Right. So if we can, let me close my door. Hold on.
Okay.
On Zoom conferences, you never know where the sound is going to be coming from next.
Yeah, Adam, sorry for your sound engineer who's going to have to kind of edit this little bit here, but it got a little noise out there. So in one of my past lives, I was the recycling coordinator in Yolo County. And at the time, in the early 1990s, we were rolling out the curbside recycling programs, you know, for plastic, paper, tin cans, things like that. And what a lot of people may not understand or realize is that each commodity, the recyclables are a commodity. Here in Butte County, our agricultural community sells commodities, whether it's almonds or almonds, whatever your pleasure is, you know, walnuts, rice, you know, these are commodities. And when you get contamination, whether it's food or a lesser tier commodity, it devalues the sale of the product. A good example is somebody who's growing an organic rice variety that gets mixed in inadvertently with a different variety of rice, but the buyers are looking for a specific product. Same thing, whether it's a high-density polyethylene plastic milk jug versus a polyethylene terephthalate soda bottle. Those are different polymers, different commodities, PET versus HDPE. Not to be confused with the metals used for soup cans or aluminum cans. It's a different commodity. So at the collection point, whether you're in Chico or Oroville or elsewhere, we generally have the recyclables put in one container. And so it's a can of mixed nuts is what you get. It's not source separated peanuts only or walnuts only. A little bag of walnuts is pretty expensive because there's been time set aside to sort out just walnuts. But in the residential and community level, it's hard to get that homogeneous waste stream. So the I think what's going on, at least on my observation with the California legislature, is a lot of consumers, they see the recyclable arrows on the bottom of containers, and they think, well, I'm going to recycle. Why isn't there a market for yogurt tubs or cottage cheese tubs? Well, that's a different type of plastic, polystyrene, than other commodities. And not it's all market driven. And if there aren't facilities in this state or other states that refabricate these products into something we as consumers can use, then the value of that commodity decreases. And for many years, California has exported its commodities to China and other, you know, countries for them to source separated. And now politically, the stage has changed where some of these other countries far across the Pacific don't want our stuff. So now it's up to us to kind of create our own markets here. So I think there's a term I recently came across called wish cycling. I wish this could be recycled. I'll just throw this, whatever it is, into my curbside recycling bin, and I'm hoping and wishing that it's recycled. Well, in many ways, if it's separated out, there may not be any value to it at all. And it's just ultimately going to come to the landfill. One thing at the state level, we get a lot of calls about where to recycle polystyrene styrofoam. I still don't know if we have a good answer for styrofoam, especially now when people purchase online products and it's shipped in cardboard and styrofoam. The cardboard markets are pretty stable. Not great, but they're stable. Same with the paper markets, too. But some of these other packaging components are difficult. Another one is low-density polyethylene or film plastic. People were, complain about paying, at least in portions of Butte County, up to 10 cents per bag, unless you carry, you reuse your own bag, paper bag or some other kind of reusable bag. On our end of it, the film plastic, it's just like to a landfill operator, they're tumbleweeds. These plastic bags just are circulated by the winds, and it just creates a major problem. And I'm not crazy about stringent regulations, but I don't mind not having to chase around as many low-density polyethylene film plastic bags. So it's the markets are commodity driven, and just like any type of supply demand, if you have too much of one thing, the value of the price goes down. If you have too little, the price goes up. So,
I wanted to move on to talking about the methane that's produced by landfills. Why is methane produced by landfills, and what do you do about it?
Okay, this goes back just a little bit of history on the microbiological activity. When you throw in trash, you've got rotting food, you've got decaying paper, all this stuff. Bacteria respires and essentially decomposes our trash. Just like someday I'm going to be buried in a hole, possibly, or maybe you'll have another way to get rid of me. I'm going to decompose and emit some type of gas. So methane comes from the decomposing garbage. And but going back to a little bit of history here, back in 1970, when the United States Environmental Protection Agency was formed, and during that decade, and ironically, it was executed by President Nixon, which set the stage for the federal EPA, Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act. And I think it was during this time, and especially when I was an undergraduate, I'm from Colorado, in the mid-1980s, when one of our classes I took talked about the greenhouse gas effect. And I didn't really understand what it meant at the time. I do now. But it's been methane has been a concern of academics and scientists for many years. Of course, back 40 years ago, the Earth's population was maybe 5 billion instead of 8 billion people. And we're all driving cars. We are all consuming products. We're all demanding power. Getting to the methane, we do have a landfill gas collection system set up over the Neil Road landfill. We have approximately 80 vertical gas wells drilled into the garbage to collect methane, and it's routed to an on-site power plant. We have a 2-megawatt power plant on site, and it's privately operated by a New England-based company. Those 2 megawatts, it's not huge, but those 2 megawatts provide power to up to 6,000 or 7,000 people elsewhere in the state. So when these power plant operators actually has a long-term power purchase agreement, and I believe it's through the city of Alameda to sell power to Alameda. Not to say that electrons from Butte County are actually making it to Alameda, but on paper, that's the equivalent. And last summer, when Lake Oroville water levels dropped below the point of hydropower production, producing 0 megawatts, little old landfill is at least still contributing 2 megawatts to the grid. So there is a way to convert landfill gas or methane to electricity. But there's some confusing laws that are making it even more difficult for us and other landfill operators and jurisdictions, too. Because now there's state laws requiring that we not dispose of organic material. Whether it's food waste or yard waste, that decays and produces methane. But we have a way to capture the methane. Now the laws are saying do not dispose of it to begin with. Well, so we still need to look at, from an engineering perspective, well, what does this mean for Neal Road? You know, what is the longevity of power supply for this site? There is a acreage or a footprint, I guess, ability to expand the 2 megawatt facility to a 4 megawatt facility. And then it gets into municipal finance and some complicated number crunching. But, okay, what is the life of the landfill's rate of capturing methane? Is it 25 years, 40 years, 50 years? And after we close, how much longer does the gas still continue? You know, but if you remove the source of the methane, then what happens there? So yeah, we're not at that point of calculations yet.
So you were talking about the law that changed in California, SB 1383, was the law that I think that was passed that requires that organic materials not go into the landfill. So where are you guys on that? I mean, in some ways you're saying that it might be better to maintain it as it is because you're gaining something from having that organic materials. But are they stopping you from doing that? And are you all planning, what are you planning to do going forward with this law?
Well, this is a very challenging law. Senate Bill 1383 was passed in 2016. And the short of it is that the title of the act is the Short-Lived Climate Pollutants Act of 2016 or something like that. The whole idea to try to curtail global warming and the impacts on, you know, the environment. And not to say that it's a bad law, but it's very complex and very convoluted. So by 2025, Butte County and the other 57 counties in California and the 450-plus cities are to reduce the amount of organic waste going in landfills by 75%. So that's only 3 years down the road from here. Well, how are we going to do that? Right. The idea is, and I can use a couple of other counties as example, if you wanted to compost the products, the yard waste, the green waste, the leafy, some people do it in their own backyard. Some people on a large municipal scale produce compost, which can be reused in agriculture and landscaping and that sort of thing. Well, how secure are those markets to do that? When's the last time you, as an individual, bought a yard or two of compost? You know, so on the state is requiring the municipalities to pre-purchase this stuff for, well, we don't know. When are we going to use it for?
Yeah, they're requiring you.
Yeah, so there's one thing. So in Chico, for example, we do have residential yard waste collection, and I use mine, and that product is processed into a compost. I've taken some courses on that. It's very interesting. And I backyard compost myself, but now you add food waste to it. So when, by definition, when you add food to the yard waste, and it becomes a putrescible waste, which is different, which is also organic, but you can, you don't want to attract flies and that sort of thing. So where does that go? Well, under the California EPA permitting tiers, they're a little different than normal composting, which is certainly different from landfill operations. So the issue that we're challenged with in Butte County is how do you collect it from the residential unit, then where does it go? Our permits at Neal Road do not allow for it. We're exploring the option of dropping off the organic material on site and then in the smaller garbage trucks, then exporting it to another facility that has those permits in place to compost the food waste with the yard waste. But it comes into some very thorny and challenging issues for the policymakers. Well, am I going to make you do this? Are we going to inspect your trash cans? The Cal EPA wants us to do that. And that's where it gets very, very challenging. On the practitioner level, if I can refer to Yolo County, which is Davis area, Woodland, and Yuba Sutter, which is south of, you know, Yuba City and Marysville. Yeah. In Yuba Sutter County, there's one company that has the collection agreement, and that same company operates the Ostrom Road landfill. They do a great job, but they're one company. They already have the yard waste collection incorporated, and they can incorporate the food waste collection on the same route because they have a facility ready to go that right. can produce the compost. And so Yolo in Davis area, they are actually building a $30 million co-composting facility at the Yolo County landfill near the City of Davis wastewater treatment plant. The thing with them in Yolo is they are centrally located to absorb this organic waste stream from larger cities, whether it's Sacramento County area or Contra Costa, just due to the proximity to those areas along Interstate 80. Mm-hmm. So it becomes an economical, economies of scale.
Yes.
Here in Butte, we just have a populace of 200,000 residents. It makes it very difficult to operate this stuff and at a very, you know, at a, as a price point that is comfortable to the citizens. So that's a challenge we have, the collection side. Where does it go?
Right. So the yard waste that's currently being composted, that is that sold or given to people who want compost for their home gardens? I know people have used that.
We don't know.
You aren't involved in that.
Right.
Okay.
No, we're not involved in that.
Okay.
The collection of the Chico urban area is administered, or City of Chico is administered through the City of Chico.
Okay.
And their compost facility in the north end of town is very well run, but it's an issue with proximity to the airport, and there's some other concerns that there needs to be a better place for it. Right. So our big challenge in Butte is who's going to do this, where, and how.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And then how do we get this to that facility the most? Because we don't want individual garbage trucks or solid waste collection trucks driving to Yuba County or Shasta County or Yolo County. There's got to be a better way to do this.
Could we talk a little bit, Eric, about the future of the landfill? We know it's going to fill up one of these days. What provisions are you making for that? And where will the trash go when you're full up?
And that's a very good question. And Craig referred to it previously, where we've commissioned a master plan and a strategic plan be prepared for the Neal Road landfill and the recycling facility. And that we're just in the process of launching that. We have, as Craig also mentioned, roughly a 200-acre site. We do have some adjacent land around it now. What do we do with it? Do we keep it as a buffer zone to ward against future development, which has happened in Sacramento and other municipalities? That's that whole NIMBY syndrome. You know, not in my backyard, do you want a landfill? Well, it's got to go. The waste needs to go somewhere. So we look forward to having that strategic plan and master plan developed for this site. and also to incorporate, you know, what is the long-term sustainability of the site? If we divert as much waste as we could, theoretically, under Senate Bill 1383, our present site operation is through the year approximately 2050, so 27 or 28 more years. If we can prolong landfill capacity here, save as much airspace as possible, then we can go further. Now, the site's already 52 years old. Since 1970, we've buried 7.2 million tons of trash. That's a pretty large number, but I was in New York City a couple months ago, and I saw they're dealing with in one day what we deal with in, you know, 3 weeks because of the population in New York City. So it's just kind of mind-boggling. But what does the community want to do? We can run and maximize, we can do minimal work and should be able to last another 25 years. But I'm thinking beyond my own lifespan. And what are we going to leave for our kids? What are we going, how are we going to manage our waste? There are many landfills in California, especially the rural areas, Nevada County, El Dorado, they ran out of landfill capacity. Some of them export their waste to Nevada. There's the Lockwood landfill east of Reno, east of Sparks. And that has become a problem. But what they've done is set up a transfer station or materials recovery facility where the garbage is dropped, whether it's Nevada City or Grass Valley, and then trucks go one way to the recyclers and another way to the landfill. It does not eliminate that community's liability to the environment, but they presently just don't have a place to put in the landfill. And so we've talked internally about this, but this Neal Road facility is probably the last landfill Butte County is likely to ever have, because it's very difficult to permit these operations. And there's always going to be stress with development. And, you know, we can recycle our way out of the problem. Well, we haven't. There's always going to be some type of residual waste that needs to be managed. So where and how is the best way to do it?
Well, you have a gigantic job. Are there other things you'd like our audience to know about Neal Road, about other facilities, or about managing waste in your and their lives?
You know, it's interesting. I guess being at the practitioner level here on site, you just see so many things come in that's reusable. And the one thing that's kind of disheartening is the bicycles. We have the ability through local nonprofit groups to have a nonprofit group will reclaim a certain amount of bicycles per week, and they restore them and they fix the chains and replace the wheels and all that sort of thing, and provide them to the needy families and needy kids. I think that's great, but they're probably only getting 1 or 2% of what we get.
Wow.
It seems like every December 26th or December 27th, we have a whole bunch of bicycles that come in. And a lot of it's the lower quality, poorly made products that they cannot really refurbish to hand off to someone else. So I'm not too extreme in my thinking with the environment. But on the other hand, it's like, gosh, what a waste. Why are we wasting so much stuff? And you've already pointed out with office furniture, I came across a customer who had this nice office furniture. I mean, it looked fantastic. And but he was in a hurry, and there was nothing we could do. So if we can rob some ideas from other facilities, like in Yolo, the reuse barn, to source separate. Monterey County is also very big on that, where they will reclaim or recover delivered by the public. They're not polishing the desks or anything like that, but receiving a donation, then they have a glorified flea market, if you will. And I think in the spirit of reuse, we encourage people to sell their product or put a free sign on it or donate if the Habitat for Humanity or some of those other types of groups that might be able to benefit from it. Yeah. But it takes a lot of coordination and setup. And on our end, permitting, you and I can have this conversation today, but it's, you know, we need to make sure the regulators are happy with our approach and how we're managing things. Right. And so, and there's typically always a cost to this too. So product stewardship, gosh, if if you don't need it, don't buy it.
I have one additional question for Eric. At the check-in station, you have a collection of yellow Tonka trucks that are on a little mound outside the bill playing place. Where did those come from, and who's responsible? It's quite charming to me.
Yeah, in fact, it's funny you mentioned that, Steve. For a customer who's not been here, as you drive into our facility and enter the scale house area, you will notice a bunch of little Tonka trucks, whether they're bulldozers or dump trucks or graders. No one has confessed who's doing that. We believe that there's a landfill customer that actually drops them off. They appear mysteriously. There's a landfill gnome that comes here and drops off these little Tonka trucks. And it's just one of those goofy mysteries of running the site. It makes it a little more enjoyable. We did have somebody try to steal them all. We said, no, you can't do that. He wanted to put them on eBay. We think somebody would say, no, you can't do that. So it's just become one of those mysteries of near road landfill operations. These little Tonka trucks appear, and yeah, they're kind of, like you say, charming. They're kind of cute.
They're great.
Thank you so much, Eric.
My pleasure, and thank you for having us. And as Craig mentioned before, we really enjoy giving landfill tours. So if you're a member of the community, anywhere from a 60-minute to hour to an hour and a half, we can do a very nice tour. There's a lot of neat things out here, and you can better understand the intricacies of running a modern-day landfill. But there's always room to get better, so we're always trying to get better.
We've been talking with Eric Miller. He's the manager of the Waste Management Division of the Public Works Department, Butte County. And earlier also with us was Craig Sisson. He's the Deputy Director of Solid Waste. And we think you're doing a great job. So thanks for talking
with us. Thanks for talking with us, yes. This is FM 90.1 KZFR. You've been listening to Ecotopia. After our interview today, Eric dropped us an email saying, pointing out that for the rest of the month, they will have their falconer on duty. They have a falcon that chases away seagulls. It's a humane way of getting the seagulls out of the dump. So you can take a look at that and learn more about it as well. Coming up in just a few seconds, it's great. North State Give and Take. Thank you, Susan. With Bobby Tryon, she'll be interviewing Pam Sachs and Aaron Haley about the musical therapy impact event coming up this weekend. It's at 7:30 at the Women's Club, and it involves a lip sync contest. I also want to put in a plug. The opening act is the Sierra Swing Band, which will be playing at 6:30, a collection of classics from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Thank you for listening to Ecotopia.
Okay. I've waited long enough, and now the time has come.
Oscar, what are you doing anyway?
What does it look like I'm doing, Bob?
Well, it looks like you're, making a mess.
I'm getting ready to sing my song, so I'm throwing out all my trash onto the sidewalk. Isn't it beautiful?
Well, I wouldn't say it's exactly beautiful, Oscar.
Well, I would. Just look at it all. What a beautiful, junky mess of rotten, rusty, mangy, musty, crummy, beautiful trash. Oh, I love trash. Anything dirty or dingy or dusty. Anything ragged or rotten or rusty. Yes, I love trash. If you really want to see something trashy, look at this. I have here a sneaker that's tattered and worn. It's all full of holes and the laces are torn. A gift from my mother the day I was born. I love it because it's trash. Oh, I love trash. Anything dirty or dingy or dusty. Anything ragged or rotten or rusty. Yes, I here's some newspaper 13 months old. I've wrapped this inside it, it's smelly and old. But I wouldn't trade it for a big pot of gold. I love it because it's trash. Yes, I love trash. Anything dirty or dingy.
North State Give and Take is made possible by generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Cotton Party, offering contemporary